It is 7 o'clock, and you are tuned to KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. 7 o'clock on a rainy Monday evening means it's time for the Opera Box.
This program is made possible by you, the KGNU listener members, and by WOW Children's Museum. More information can be found at wowchildrensmuseum.org.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome in the Opera Box. I'm your host, Ron Nadel. I hope all is well with you and your friends and families. Tonight, my playlist features operas where, indeed, all's well that ends well. Operas where things turn out well, which might have otherwise been tragic, such as Rameau's Hippolyte et Aricie. And we'll hear music of Berlioz, Mozart, Verdi, Haydn, and more. Everything will be all right if you join me now in the Opera Box. Thank you. A shepherdess sings of love's triumph, accompanied by a nearby nightingale, after Hippolyte and Aricia are reunited. Aricia is the daughter of the sworn enemy of Hippolytus' father. Hippolytus was almost killed by Phaedra, his stepmother. From Hippolyte et Aricia, this is the first opera composed by Jean-Philippe Rameau in 1733. And in that recording, we heard Mark Minkowski conducting the musicians of Louvre and the Sagittarius Vocal Ensemble. And it's just coming up on 7 o'clock, 7 minutes after 7 o'clock. You're in the Opera Box in KGNU with Ron Nadel, and I've got a playlist tonight of operas which end well despite impending doom. Now, if you thought the saga of Hippolytus and Aricia was a bit of a maze, wait till you hear about Foligno and Phillida from Haydn's Fidelity Rewarded, his opera of 1781. The plot concerns the town of Cumae, which is under a cloud of shame. During a ritual in honor of Diana, goddess of the hunt and chastity, the ritual and temple of Diana were defiled by lascivious acts of a forest nymph. Now the town must sacrifice a faithful couple to a local sea monster or face destruction. But if someone is willing to sacrifice themselves, Diana will remove the punishment. Well, Foligno and Phillida, an innocent couple, they're in love, but they avoid being together so as to not be seen as being faithful together. In this scene from the end of the opera, they meet secretly in the woods, but the evil priest Malabeo discovers them. The couple are dressed in sacrificial robes to be tossed to the sea monster. Suddenly, Foligno declares he'll sacrifice himself to save Phillida. With a clap of thunder, Diana appears, and she rewards Foligno's selflessness, uniting the lovers and absolving the town to everyone's rejoicing.
si conduca questa vittima sventurata, ove l'attende con denti neri a bocca aperta il mostro.
A bocca aperta? No, no, torniamo indietro.
Non si può, che la dea vuol la tua morte. Avanti!
Ma il signore Diana non vuol fedeli amanti sacrificio.
Appunto.
Ed io fedele con le donne non sono stato mai. Torniamo indietro!
Ah, troppo questa tua repugnanza offende il lume. Olà, pastori, al tempio si trascini costui.
Piano, aspettate, bella Maranda.
Amici, olà!
O calunnia, o donna rea, e per salvar l'amante, così la mia reputazione oltraggi.
Misericordia!
Delibero!
Al mostro, per lui non v'è perdono!
Conte, amico mio, perduto io sono!
Amici, si sospenda l'orribile sacrificio! Udite, all'orca, se volontaria un'alma si presenta, pace cuma avrà. La dea sdegnata nell'oracolo suo così fa bella. Or la vittima è pronta, ed io son quella.
Oh!
thanks to the selfless Fileno, Diana, the goddess of the hunt and chastity, absolves the town of Cumae, and Fileno and Phyllida can be married. The conclusion to Haydn's Fidelta Premiata, Fidelity Rewarded. In that recording, we heard Tony Landi as Fileno, Lucia Valentini as Phyllida, and Carrie Lovas was Diana. Antal Doherty conducted the Lausanne Chamber Orchestra and the Suisse Romande Radio Chorus. Well, it's about 22 and a half minutes after 7 o'clock, and you're in the Opera Box with Ron Nadel, and I've got a playlist featuring operas that end well after all. And when we return, a famous sculptor faces hanging.
Support comes from the Gourmet Kitchen, a catering company located in Westminster and serving the Front Range. The Gourmet Kitchen offers American fare and ethnic gourmet food from around the globe, now offering online ordering and curbside pickup. More information at thegourmetkitchen.com.
Well, Hector Berlioz's first opera, Benvenuto Cellini, was composed in 1836 and it premiered in 1838. It was based on the memoirs of the famed 16th century Italian sculptor and artist. He had a reputation, though, for competitiveness and quarreling, procrastination and philandering. In the opera, Cellini is in love with Teresa, daughter of the Vatican treasurer Balducci. Balducci is friends with the sculptor Firmosca and wants him to marry his daughter. Well, the Pope instructs Balducci to hire Cellini to cast a statue of Perseus for Carnival. Cellini uses some of the advance payment to buy a lot of wine, which makes him work a little bit slowly. Meanwhile, the jealous Firmosca plotted to discredit Cellini and marry Teresa himself. He drew Cellini into a fight, and Firmosca's friend was killed. On top of that, the Pope was becoming impatient with the slow work on the statue. He personally checked on progress and saw the fantastic statue half completed. Firmosca then told the Pope that Cellini murdered his friend. The Pope told Firmosca to complete the statue, but Cellini threatened to destroy it first, so the Pope gave Cellini until morning to finish the job or face hanging for murder. In this scene from the end of the opera, Cellini is working furiously, melting the metal. His assistants work slowly, threatening to stop until they're fully paid. The Pope arrives just as Cellini learns there isn't enough metal to complete the statue. Cellini won't give up. He orders his other statues melted down. The statue of Perseus is completed, and everyone acknowledges Cellini's victory. The Pope pardons Cellini, Balducci allows Teresa to marry him, and all praise craftsmanship.
Thank you. trompette la fournaise et le tout en feu. À présent, tout va plus mieux.
Puisque Dieu lui-même a
In spite of himself and his rivals, the capricious sculptor Benvenuto Cellini completes his statue of Perseus just in time to avoid being hung and is united with his lover, Teresa. From Benvenuto Cellini, opera by Hector Berlioz, we heard the tenor Nicolai Gaeta as Cellini, Christiane Ada-Pierre, soprano was Teresa, Jules Bastin, the bass, was Balducci, Teresa's father. Robert Massard was Firmosca, the competitor sculptor, and Roger Sawyer, baritone, was the Pope. Colin Davis conducted the orchestra and chorus of the Royal Opera Covent Garden. 24 minutes before 8 o'clock, you're in the Opera Box with Ron Nadell, and I've got a playlist featuring operas where all's well that ends well. And be sure to stay with me for a Classic Monday at 8 o'clock. I'll continue to be your host, and I've got a program of very unusual classical music, works that don't fit into the typical genres. That's right here at 8 o'clock on KGNU. And when we come back, a brother and sister are captured by a witch.
Support comes from The Westword, Denver's independent source of local news and culture. More information at westword.com.
Well, who doesn't know the fairy tale of Hansel and Gretel? The hungry children are ordered by their mother to pick berries in the forest after they spill the last of the family's milk. They got lost, spent a night in the forest, and in the morning they saw an amazing sight, a house made of gingerbread, surrounded by a gate of little gingerbread figures. Well, it's the Wicked Witch's house, and she captured the two children and plans to eat them. Just when the witch is about to put them in the oven, the children get free and they push her in the oven. Well, in this final scene, Hansel and Gretel find themselves surrounded by gingerbread children. "Released," they sing in awe. Hansel takes the witch's wand and restores the children to life. And just then, they hear their father. He's found them after searching all night.
Mm-hmm.
via. Das Wunder an, wie die Hexe hexen kann, wie sie hart knuspert, Säbel und Zunge hart.
Schaut das Wunder an, wie die Hexe hexen kann, wie sie hart knuspert, Säbel und Zunge hart.
Merkt es ihm im Strafgericht, diese Werke dauern nicht, wenn die Not aufs Höchste steigt, oder der Herr sich gnädig zu uns neigt. Ja, wenn die Not aufs Höchste steigt, oder der Herr dir Hand uns
Hansel and Gretel, kill the wicked witch and restore all the gingerbread children to life, just as their father arrives. The conclusion of Hansel and Gretel by Engelbert Humperdinck. We heard soprano Anna Mofo as Hansel and soprano Helen Donath as Gretel. Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau was their father, and Kurt Eichhorn conducted the Bavarian Radio Orchestra and the Toltz Boys Choir. Well, farce can provide a poignantly happy ending as well. Mozart composed the first of his four brilliant operas, The Marriage of Figaro, when he was 30 years old. The opera stands out because Mozart elevated the farcical story with music that depicts real characters and sympathetic feeling, especially at the end. Figaro is engaged to marry Susanna, the chambermaid to Countess Rosina, but her husband, the Count Almaviva, plans to seduce the young Susanna himself. Figaro suspects Susanna may be in love with the Count, and he plans his own revenge. Well, the women have the last laugh and plot to teach the men a lesson. It all comes to a head at the end of Act Four in a garden at night. The Countess and Susanna each wear the other's clothes. And in this last scene, Figaro declares his love for the Countess, who is really Susanna. The Count arrives looking for Susanna, but it's the Countess in disguise. When he angrily realizes he's been caught out, he kneels and begs forgiveness. The Countess generously forgives him, and everyone is reconciled by her example.
Ich bin ein Mann, 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 ich bin ein
Countess Rosina and her chambermaid Susanna teach their husbands a lesson in graciousness, and it's all's well that ends well. From Mozart's Marriage of Figaro, we heard Jesse Norman as Countess Rosina, Ingvar Vixel as Count Almaviva, and Mirella Freni as Susanna. Colin Davis conducted the BBC Symphony Orchestra. Well, I'm going to conclude tonight's program of All's Well That Ends Well with another great farce, Falstaff, Verdi's rendition of Shakespeare's Merry Wives of Windsor. Now, Verdi's opera Falstaff was completed in 1893 when he was 80. Now, stay with me here on this plot. Falstaff is the rotund knight who fancies himself a wooer of women. He's at loose ends, though, and tries to woo two rich married women, Alice Ford and Meg Page. He sends them both love letters, but they're good friends, and they find out about his scheme. Alice and Meg, along with Alice's daughter, Nanette, conspire to teach Falstaff a lesson. They'll lure him to the woods at night on the pretense of a rendezvous with Alice. Everyone will dress like elves, ghosts, and demons and pounce on Falstaff. Now, as a secondary plot, Nanette is in love with young Fenton and wants to marry him. Unfortunately, Nanette's father wants her to marry the wealthy and much older Dr. Caius. Mr. Ford thus hatched a plan to have his daughter marry the old doctor. He told the doctor to wear a friar's hood during the prank on Falstaff. Everyone will be in costume, and Nanette will wear a fairy's veil. During the ruckus, Ford will bring them together and bless them as man and wife. Well, Falstaff arrived for his rendezvous, and Nanette appeared dressed as the Queen of the Fairies. She summoned the evil spirits, who appeared. Petrified, Falstaff fell to the ground. The conspirators reveal themselves and form a circle around him, telling him he must repent. Well, in the confusion, Alice covers Nanette with a veil, and Fenton dons a friar's habit. She then gets Falstaff's lackey, Bardolph, to wear the fairy queen's veil. Are you still with me? In the final scene, Ford crowns the evening with the betrothal of the fairy queen. Alice steps forward, saying another couple would like to take part in the occasion, and Ford solemnly blesses both couples, asking heaven to unite them in marriage. Everyone removes their masks, revealing that Nanette has married Fenton and Dr. Caius has married Bardolph. Everyone forgives everyone else in good humor.
Ogni sorta di gente dozzinale mi beffa e se ne gloria. Pur senza me, costor con tanta boria non avrebbero un briciolo di sale. Son io, son io, son io che mi fa scaltri. L'arguzia mia crea l'arguzia degli altri.
Ma
coronorem la mascherata bella con gli sponsai della regina delle fate. Già senza la coppia degli sposi, attenti, eccola.
Sato suo tutti e due.
Tutti e tre.
Facciamo il parentado, e che il ciel piglia gioia. Un coro ai termini alla sera, e con Sir Falstaff tutti andiamo a cena.
Falstaff has taught a lesson, and Nanette and Fenton are married. The conclusion to Falstaff, the great opera by Giuseppe Verdi. We heard the great Geraint Evans leading an all-star cast. Geraint Evans was Falstaff, Ilva Ligabue as Alice, Rosalind Elias as Meg, Mirella Freni again as Nanette, Robert Merrill as Ford, and Alfredo Kraus as Fenton. Georg Schulte conducted the RCA Italian Opera Orchestra and Chorus. Well, it's a couple minutes after 8 o'clock. This is your host, Ron Nadell. I want to thank you for joining me for tonight's Opera Box. I told you everything would work out fine. Stay tuned now for A Classic Monday.
Support comes from Boulder Weekly, an independently owned newspaper available at area newsstands, outdoor boxes, and online at boulderweekly.com.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to KGNU's A Classic Monday. I'm still your host, Ron Nadel. Tonight, my playlist features unusual works of classical music, somewhat outside the box, such as The Unanswered Question of Charles Ives. Plus, the music of Ferruccio Busoni, Dmitri Shostakovich, and Alan Hovhaness. They'll make you sit up when you join me now for Classic Monday. The Unanswered Question by Charles Ives is a mystical work composed in 1908. He revived it in 1935, but it was never performed until 1946. It's scored for three groups: solo trumpet, string orchestra, and woodwind quartet. All three groups play in different time signatures and different key signatures. Ives even suggested that they be situated so they couldn't even see each other. In the score, he provided a detailed foreword with specific instructions. The strings play quietly throughout, in C major, triple piano, with no tempo change. They represent the silence of the druids who know, see, and hear nothing. A trumpet intones the perennial question of existence. The hunt for the invisible answer is made by, quote, flutes and other humans.